This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the crime in the streets. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it. My life has value.
This is all I know.
I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly.
Oh, is that what it is? Well, I don't want you to violate the law.
Get in your back, number. He'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
Good works are done in light, so what's done in darkness needs to be brought to light. And it's up to us, citizen media, to be out here and expose it.
We will stand and fight.
Seeking answers to age-old questions. Deciphering the world painted around you by the mainstream media. This is the Kev Baker Show. And now, here is your host, Kev Baker.
Tonight, I'm joined by an old guest we've had on a couple of times. Been far too long since he's been on, Mr. Ola Damigurd. You can find Ola's work over at lightonconspiracies.com. Ola's an author, and he's been fighting on the front line for over 30 years trying to expose, in particular, assassinations and false flag operations. And anyone who listens to the show knows that false flag operations are something that are very, very close to the things that I research. And to have Ola on again is absolutely fantastic. Now, Ola, we had some major problems even getting this far in this interview before it begins, and I want to welcome you to the show. The listeners will be absolutely thrilled to have you back, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely great. I'm doing a 30-day juice fast at the moment, so if I get a bit juicy in my head at times and lose concentration, it's because of that. But otherwise, I'm super.
Well, you know what, Ola? With the Kev Baker Show, that sounds like you'll sit right home. You'll be right at home, so you will. Now, before the show, we were trying to discuss what we were going to go into. We're just going to briefly touch on Ebola. I've been telling the listeners there's so much Ebola news out there. I've no new information for them that's going to either take away all the fear or prepare them for what is to come. What's your take on the Ebola outbreak?
My take is take a deep breath, look out the window. Are there heaps of dead bodies outside? Are there heaps of people stumbling around looking like zombies? I would guess no. And I would encourage anyone globally who listens to this program in the African states, Latin America, Costa Rica, Honduras, these type of countries where this so-called epidemia is going wild, you know, please call in. Open, look out the windows. Do you see heaps of dead bodies everywhere? Is there a mass thing going on? I would guess no, because we're back to the same scaremongering again and again. It's like you said, I've spent 30 years doing this, and it gets almost tiresome, you know, at times to keep repeating myself. Because when you look into these cases, it's the same, it's the same, it's the same. It's the same people behind it, the same financial structures, the same owners of the laboratories as big behind big pharma and big oil and the wars and all of these things. It is the same. Having said that, the Ebola virus is real. I mean, it's created in a laboratory by these people with, I would say, their minds are not healthy. I would say the total opposite. They're absolute mad. If you see they might look very nice and decent, but their actions are absolutely totally mad. So you don't know what they're up to. But when you look at up until now, I would say false flag, false flag, false flag all over the place. And if I can remind you of interviews I've done with you, Kev, earlier on and with many, many other shows, when you see the setup of a false flag operation, it's always built on problem, reaction, solution. They secretly create a problem. to get the reaction from you. And the reaction they want from you is the emotional, oh my God, something needs to be done. And then they will serve you the solution.
And that's exactly what we've seen in Dallas when the first actual victim turned up there that was allowed to fly into the country. I was getting reports from people in Texas of panic buying. Hysteria was more of a problem than the Ebola, Ola, and that fits into what the elites actually want, because they love civil unrest. And like you say, that justifies anything, any plans that they may have to roll out.
This is the whole point. And if you see the whole setup with all these FEMA camps, for instance, in the States, because the States are one of the countries they're really trying to hit the hardest at the moment, there's 800 fully staffed FEMA camps on standby, you know, fully equipped with antibiotics, with food, water supplies, all of these things. I mean, the setup is there. So in one way, really scary. At the same time, it has not happened yet. And when you look at these false flag operations, we've gone through the Woolwich ones and so on. I mean, my God, it is so sloppy nowadays. You look at these things, we're back to the same thing. You know, behind these things, you have like marketing agencies, they use these, you know, just like if you want to, you know, let's promote cornflakes or let's promote whatever, you know, green juices or something like that. Let's come up with a logo. Let's find some colors, you know, for this campaign, all of these things. Okay, the Ebola campaign, you will see again and again, the colors they've chosen is a fluorescent green and yellow. These are the two colors that keeps appearing all the time. You will see in the background very often on a man with dark skin. And here I get a juice. Thank you so much, Rita. So you will see somewhere in the background, you will see a dark skinned man in a very green outfit, or you will see these green gloves, or you will see, like, when you see the virus crawling around
Of the actual Dallas victim, he was actually wearing a green shirt.
Well, am I surprised? I had not seen that, but yeah, am I surprised? Absolutely.
When you've actually mentioned that there.
Yeah. And then you got the gloves, or you got green cups, or you got victims crawling around on the floor, you know, in green t-shirts. I mean, this color, it's not a very usual color. So they picked it to make it they look upon it as a product, you know, how to make company identity.
It matches the biohazard signs that we've all become accustomed to in the Hollywood movies and the propaganda. And we've seen the crisis actors, they've been there. And before we move on, one last thing I think you would like to reiterate as well, as they will roll out a vaccine on the back of this hype. We're already hearing about an Ebola rabies-based vaccine. I mean, try and get your head around that, Ola. We've got Fox News calling for people to go to the Ebola camps, the FEMA camps that you were talking about. And that, for me, is a bigger danger than any Ebola that may be outbreaking in Western Africa right now.
Can I say one thing? I've got one comment for all of this. Okay, it's come on, folks. I will go back to the false flag operation again. One of the things they love bombs or crisis, major crisis. Like, it's there to scare the shit out of you. That is the whole point, so that you will buy into their solution. And one of the things they love surrounding these things are nurses, missionaries, priests, nuns, these type of thing, because they play mind with games with your mind, and it's the emotional thing, you know, oh, the good guy, the angels, and now they've been affected. So you will see that the victims, look at the victims, okay, it was a nurse that was so, I mean, she was like an angel and took care of some poor victims in Africa. Africa equals total chaos in most people's mind, you know, that's where it spreads, that's where there's no laws, no medical thing. Okay, so this angel of mercy has gone down there to help them and come back with this disease. You look at here in Spain, Oh, a missionary and a priest. Okay, thank you very much. Where did they come from? Africa. What did they do there? They were trying to rescue the poor black population. Oh, the angels. Okay, they come here. The plane that arrives, is it sort of like a high, super quality medical unit that comes, you know, because this is an incredibly dangerous virus. Is it like super, the whole thing in a plastic bag, the whole plane, you know, encapsulated? Absolutely not. It's a military plane. It even says it defends, the Spanish defense. Okay, so you got the pilots that opens up the door. Have they got gloves? Have they got masks? Have they got... No, they're in military uniforms. Thank you very much. And then comes the whole thing with this stretcher. And when it comes to these cases, if you talk to medical experienced people, they would say never carry a stretcher with only two people if you got a very severe... a victim with very severe damages or problems, internal bleedings and so on. You, four people at least, and you never walk backwards with a stretcher. You always turn around so that you see where you're walking. What do we see here? Two people carrying it out backwards out of the plane, you know.
Ridiculously, in America, one of the doctors, the first doctor to have been flown home, he walked out the back of the actual ambulance. He walked into the hospital accompanied by one nurse in protective clothing, but he was shedding bodily skin and everything on the way into the hospital.
I rest my case, and then you see the ambulance arrive, and these two medical people, you know, all dressed in white plastic bags, what do? They salute the ambulance. What is that? They saluted. I mean, what kind of people do you think are in these white plastic bags? Military people. Why would they salute an ambulance? Because there's a higher ranking officer inside the ambulance. Okay. Then they get this whole thing up. There's this incubator. It almost looks like, okay, you stop it. You look inside it. You got equipment lying on this poor bugger who's in there. But there's no one in there. I bet you my heart, come and chop off my arm if there's a sick person in there, you know. And that's the whole thing. And then you have like a presidential escort to leave this whole thing, you know. There's a long caravan of cars, you know. And then it's like, come on. And then they come. This is standard, I tell you. Then they take this victim. And if there is a victim, yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't believe so. And then they put them in a ward that is isolated, so nobody can get access. Nobody can get in there. The press cannot.
How convenient.
How convenient, Kev.
Yes.
And then I tell you so many times when I've been spending thousands of hours into newspaper archives and all of these things in before the internet. My God, I was buried in documents, you know, from early morning to late evening, not because I'm employed or get paid or have any kind of benefit out of doing this, just because I wanted to stop this mad thing because it's been going on for a long time.
That's what and I admire about researchers like yourself, Jordan Maxwell, people who have been on this before the internet. I actually feel like I'm cheating a lot. It's so easy for me to go on and get all this stuff off the internet. It's at my fingertips. But the likes of you, you've actually put in the footwork. You've gone to the libraries. You've had to go and hunt down documents and that. Even to somebody growing up right now, to my son, Kevin, he wouldn't even understand that. He doesn't.
I know.
It's a totally different mindset nowadays. So hats off to you, Ola, for actually going to.
I tell you. I tracked down assassins even, you know, sleeping agents and stuff like that.
And this is where we want to go now, because Ebola, there's enough of that. Leave the Ebola. Keep an eye on it, folks, but don't pay too much attention and definitely don't give it the fear that they are trying to get out of you.
The thing is that anyone can manipulate numbers, you know, and it's sort of like, okay, what are we going to put there? Like 14,000 in Liberia.
Numbers aren't even that scary when you look at it. I mean, you get 1.2 million a year die of malaria, and yet we're only looking at a figure of 4,000, allegedly.
I would also like to say, you know, I was a key speaker invited outside the Bilderberg meeting in Copenhagen earlier this summer, yeah, outside the hotel, not inside. At this meeting, there was the mayor of Atlanta invited.
Yeah.
When ever has a mayor, a low-ranking no one, been invited to the Bilderberg meeting that only invites people of high ranking in society, you know, bankers, top politician, royalties, but the mayor of Atlanta.
And of course, Atlanta is forefront in this Ebola scare.
My God, how surprised am I?
Yeah, another coincidence.
Just these coincidences, they just pop up all over the place. And then at the meeting as well, there was quite a lot of I don't know the English expression, but experts on biohazards, you know, and different types, invited to the meeting. Has not happened before. Before the Bilderberg meeting, there were a handful of cases. After the Bilderberg meeting, the numbers just skyrocketed with the epicenter in Atlanta, where the CDC is also, and where the patent of Ebola is connected to the CDC center. I rest my case. And I was on another interview, Event Horizons, with Dr. Robin Falkov. I mean, she is a super doctor, this girl. And she was asking my opinion because she totally agreed with me. And I said to them, please, collect the money, send me a ticket, and I will personally fly to whatever country where this epicenter is, lie down with these victims, and have a good time. You know, because the whole thing is, I live in Spain now, because I had two friends that was murdered in Sweden due to our investigations, and I felt I got threatened as well, so I left. I live here, and often people call us, sometimes people call down and say, how are you doing? How are you doing? Are you okay? And I'm like, what? Well, there's been an earthquake. Where? Right where you're living. You live right in the epicenter. I'm like, what? I don't know. I haven't even noticed. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen anything. Well, my God, you're so lucky. Well, apparently I am. Then they call again. How are you? How are you? Are you okay? What? Well, this happened. You know, there's this massive big fire. Where? Right where you're living. I'm telling you, when I spent all these hours in the archives, one of the things I found out was that most newspapers have different editions from different areas of the country. You know, the South has one, the North has one, the middle of Sweden has one edition. And I found that, you know, like for instance, I remember especially one example, there was a school where they said, oh my God, there's some pupils that go, they take more portions than, they go and take more than twice in the lunchroom. My God, that is a major problem. So what they did, they installed a system where a palm reading system, you know, that the pupils had to put their palm prints so that they wouldn't go and steal extra food. Okay, the cost of extra food, £5, £8. The cost of this installation, 1.2 million. You know, like, okay.
That's the way we're going in Scotland as well. They're bringing in a fingerprinting system for school dinners. It's unbelievable.
But this is 20 years ago, I'm talking about 20, 25 years ago. But then I checked the edition for the north of Sweden, because this said, in the one that I saw for the south of Sweden, it said that the school was in the north of Sweden. Then I checked the edition for the north. Exactly the same thing, but then it said the school was in the south of Sweden. They do it so you cannot check locally if it's true. This is why you hear about these diseases in Namibia or Liberia or Sierra Leone or something like that. How many people have got personal contact in Sierra Leone? How many people?
Or dare I say it, even places like Sandy Hook.
Ooh, yeah. You know, so the thing is, what I would suggest if people are really scared, get a phone book, find out the epicenter where it said that, you know, like 1,500 people have died recently. You can find some, just phone anyone randomly at that area and says, hello, 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 I'm a concerned citizen. Could you please inform me, is this really going on where you live? I bet you, they would say, what?
And this is where I'm really one of the luckiest guys in the world, having this even a job, to use that as a phrase. I mean, you don't get paid, but the likes of the Ebola in Texas, I've got contacts there in Texas now who come right to me and say, listen, don't start buying into all this. They're on the ground, like you say, Ola, and there's nothing can beat that. And that's one of the advantages of the internet, aside from all the surveillance aspects of it. It's something we can use to verify the news they're trying to put out there.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So, and I just want to say the reason why I was invited on the show was because I was in Spain, and this was where the whole massive thing was. It's like, I look out the window, beautiful, happy people, not nothing. It's nothing. It's like a massive big fart there in the air. It's not real. It smells like it's real, but it's not, and it's just there to scare you. At the same time, I would say, be aware of these people because they're getting very desperate, you know, and they're, you know, because more and more people are waking up on a daily basis, and the spotlight is being aimed, if I have any say, right at them, you know, so they're getting shaky, and this is why it's getting so sloppy on so many different levels. And now we can talk about something else.
Well, I think you were wanting to get back, even back further in time, to the 60s and the music scene back then. Now, I've heard you speaking on the more recent events of the likes of Whitney Houston's death and stuff like that, but I'm really fascinated to hear what you've got to say about the 60s scene back when the music was at its peak. And was there some kind of CIA hijacking of the music scene back then, Ola?
No, Kevin, you're just a conspiracy theorist. I mean, how could you even imagine such a thing?
Well, as David Cameron would say, I'm a non-violent extremist on a par with an Islamic State fighter. Go figure.
It's like, come on. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Anyway, can I describe an area just outside Los Angeles? And you make up your mind if you sound that this is credible or so. Please remember that in the early 1950s, the whole Gladio network was being built up in Europe, and the CIA was very much into. Once they started seeing that they could use this Gladio like the hidden ghost army. That there wasn't really a need for it because the threat from the East wasn't as big as they thought. So they had this incredible muscle, violent muscle, an army that nobody knew about, that was just there doing no good, you know. So they came up with this charming idea, the strategy of tension. Let's inflict fear and terror into normal modern society to scare the crap out of normal people so that they will welcome more and more control, more and more centralized control, surveillance, militarized police, all of these type of things. Exactly what we're seeing today. This was decided in the early 50s, the strategy of tension. And what they did was they unleashed waves and waves of terror, like the supermarket shootings in Brussels, like the train bombing in Bologna, like they were in financing these different terror, so-called terror organizations like the Red Army and many. I tell you, the more I look into it, they're just everywhere behind all of these awful, awful events that has affected people in such a major way. And I would also suggest that some of these massacres on football stadiums are also the work of Gladio. You know, so easy to start a whole panic thing that will just make people once again panic and just kill each other by pushing each other to death. You know, once again stirring the whole thing up so that people will not feel secure, they will not feel safe, and that it can happen just to anyone, anywhere, at any time. That is the agenda. So, we come to the early 60s. And in the early 60s, I've been talking about Operation 40 before, this highly skilled, ultra-secret, top a team of assassins that was created under the supervision of Richard Nixon, Alan Dulles, with the CIA people in control, and then a whole bunch of exiled Cubans as mercenaries, or, I mean, elite killers that was being used to many different hits. They took out JFK, and what happened then was that, I would say, the JFK assassination was a major step forward on their behalf, a major blow to the rest of us, a coup d'etat globally. It was a very, very violent, brutal war machine that took over there. And they have stayed in power ever since. And they're behind all of this crap that just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating on an ever more faster scale. I mean, it's just on a weekly scale now. Their agenda at the moment is to scare the weak. Just boom, 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 boom. Hit us, hit us, hit us, hit us, so that we won't be able to even focus to look into things like Sandy Hook or mass shootings. You look to the left. Boom! It's like being up against a boxer. Just you're just like, oh my god, oh my god. The whole world is crazy. I'm going down. It's filled with terrorists. Everybody, I need to protect myself. I can't even trust my own family. That's the thing. Okay, but in the early 60s, one of the reasons they took out Kennedy and thereby also stopped Robert Kennedy, and later on they killed both Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and Robert Kennedy as well, was because there was almost like a civil war going on in the States, because there was such a racial tension. There was this whole anti-war movement going on, trying to stop the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was to a major extent based on drugs coming from the Golden Triangle and pumped into the States and Europe and so on.
You want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I'm telling you, take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
The 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon.
Saturday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Wars are psychological just as much as they are physical, just as much as they are economic. Listen up.
We tax you your peace of mind. We construct lies to make them true. We tell it, we sell it, you buy it, I get mine.
And the whole Vietnam War was used for so many, many different things. Also, where the core group was Operation 40, and the same players that will keep popping up every time you look into these type of things. Anyway, so in the 60s, from their point of view, there was a need to distract the whole anti-war movement thing, because the states hadn't been involved in Vietnam up until the Kennedy assassination. They only had a few couple of thousand advisors. And then the very day after Kennedy's death, Johnson signed the order that started the Vietnam War. Okay.
They don't even try and hide it, Ulla. They don't even wait a sizable length of time to get on with the agenda that they were intending to carry out. I mean, it's hardly even cold, and they're moving on with their war plans.
But this is the whole thing that you have to go back in time to understand what times that we're talking about. It was the times where the Beatles were shocking the world because they had a haircut going to this here. You know, that shocked the world. What kind of world are we talking about? Like, totally squared in a mentality, you know, not open to any, so easily manipulated. So, we were at a point where the youth movement, because when the Kennedy administration came into power, it was such a wave of hope, you know, to the world. Everybody was like, yay, we can do it. We can change this. There was this whole thing going up. He was killed. Lots of reactions globally. My God, what's going on? What's going on? And then the war started and everybody was just like, we need to stop it. We need to stop it. So how could they deal with this problem? Now I'm going to describe a tiny little square of land in just outside Los Angeles. Okay. We're in the mid 60s. This is a place. It's only a few square miles, and it's in a rocky area. I mean, not but hilly, you know, very lots of beautiful green land, lots of forest and so on. It's more or less just a single road, a few single roads going up there and spreading out, and there are houses down on the sides and so on. Very few houses, very few people. Okay. In the middle of this, it's just outside Los Angeles. I mean, you can see it from Los Angeles, and it's right between the LA Basin and the San Fernando Valley. In that place, you had some film stars and some, like Houdini used to live there. He died there. There were Tom Mix. There was different actors, you know, on that, especially from the black and white era. They were living up there. But also in there was see if I can remember. It was called the 2 seconds. What was it called? The Lookout Mountain Laboratory. Okay. This whole thing, this whole area is, there's loads of tunnels going through these hills, lots of caves, lots of weird things going on there. And there was also totally hidden what was called the Lookout Mountain Laboratory. That was originally a fortified air defense center built in 1941. Okay? 2.5 acres, totally secluded, now very not close to what is now called the Wonderland Park Avenue. Okay? It was totally hidden and surrounded by electrified fence, a top secret military intelligence facility. Okay? In 1947, it was the world's only completely self-contained movie studio with 100,000 feet of floor space, sound stages, screening rooms, film processing labs, editing facilities, an animation department, and 17 climate-controlled film vaults, plus a helicopter pad and a bomb shelter. Okay? It is said to have produced some 19,000 classified motion pictures. 19,000. That is more than all the Hollywood studios combined, which should make the canyon the motion picture capital of the world.
Why have I never heard of this place, Ola?
I know, Kevin. I know. That's why I'm talking about it. This was run by the U.S. Air Force. It was also a research and development center with cutting-edge technology and for reverse advanced research. And people, you know, like the film director John Ford, you had actors like Jimmy Stewart, Howard Hawks, Ronald Reagan, here we go, Bing Crosby, Walt Disney as well, very central in many of these things, Marilyn Monroe, and I think, what's his name? John Wayne as well. People like them were contracted there and cleared. They had the security clearance to go there. None of them has ever mentioned it. Okay? And this facility was unknown more or less until the early 1990s. So we're talking like a super duper multi-balti alpha secret center hidden up in the hills.
This is like Area 51 for films.
There you go. And these 19,000 films, what the hell were they?
I'm glad you went there because I was scared to ask. Classified movies, what kind of stuff are we talking about there?
I did not say they were classified, did I?
Sorry, yeah, you did, sorry. Well, maybe I picked you up.
I did say classified, they were classified. Sorry, it's the juicing. They were classified. So 19,000 during these years. What? Have you seen any of them? I'm sure we have without knowing it, you know? Okay. So you have this little beautiful valley with this all of these tunnels, a few houses up and down the road. This incredible center, bright spot in the middle. So here's what I will tell you next. Right when this whole thing was exploding, the whole war situation, everything, you know, they had started to have massive problems with the youth movement. The black, you know, normal people just said, oh my God, let's be friends, you know, black and white, what does it matter? You know, it's a new time, let's move forward. But there was all this racial tension and all of these things going on. So it almost getting to a point of civil war, you know, that was where Martin Luther King was very central and Malcolm X and so on. So they had a major problem on their hands. When it comes to false flag operation and psyops, one of the things they do is distraction. Pull away the attention from what they're trying to hide and get people to look over here, you know, make a bomb explode, make people look over there.
Something like Kent State, something like that happening.
So what happened here in the early 1960s, in 64, it was almost, at that time, the music scene was in New York, in Memphis, and in Nashville. That was where the music scene was going on, you know. Los Angeles, absolutely nothing. There was nothing when it came to recording or anything like that. But in the spring of 1964, it was almost like the Pied Piper was standing in a corner, and musicians, songwriters, to become superstars came from everywhere. Not really true. Most of them came from Washington, D.C. But otherwise than that, they came from different direction. All of them gathered in what is called Laurel Canyon. This, it's only like a few square miles. It is so small, this area. Okay. They came there. One of the main people were Frank Zappa. Okay. Frank Zappa and his wife, Gail Zappa. If you look at all of these people, more or less all of them had parents that was involved in high, deep, deeply involved in military, intelligence agencies or naval bases or different types of high ranking officers. They had grown up close to military bases, many of them being part of military schools and so on. And these people, I'm talking about people like Frank Zappa, his wife Gail Zappa. She also worked for the ONI for a while. Frank Zappa's father, high ranking. You had David Crosby. His father was an admiral, big time, big time. That's Crosby, Stills and Nash. Stills, Stephen Stills. He had a military background. He even claims to have been in Vietnam at the time where the U.S. was not there. You know, he claims that on a regular basis. And the only people that were there were so-called military advisors, meaning secret op, you know, or Green Berets or special ops. These type of people were there. Okay. Then you have Zappa's manager. His background was he was in 1961. He was in Congo, you know, as a young traveler. Just when Patrick Lumumba was assassinated by the CIA. And then he went to Cuba on the very night when the Cuban Revolution was there to fight with Castro because he was a young guy with big ideology. I think smelled CIA big time.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And his dad was something similar. Then you have people like Jim Morrison from the Doors. You know, Jim Morrison's father was the admiral of the ship that was attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin incident. That was the false flag operation that started the whole Vietnam War by saying, we're under attack, and that say, okay, if Vietnam has attacked the U.S., my God, we need to retaliate, go for it. That's what they did, and it's come forward lately, in later years, that it was a total hoax. There was absolutely nothing to it. That was Jim Morrison's father who did that in 1964. Okay, at the exact same time as Jim Morrison was on his way to Laurel Canyon. Okay, possible, I'm saying it's possible, but you get, wait, I'm not even started. Jim Morrison arrived without being able to play an instrument. He had never done, he wasn't interested in music at all, and that's what he says in his interviews. He came with a stack of songs that he reportedly had written, all of them hit songs. You know, but he never ever wrote a song after that. He came with a stack of paper, here it is. How did he make these songs? How did he write them down? How did he do? Okay, the Doors could not, there was only one person in this band that could play at all. And they were supplied with instruments from one single guy that I forgot the name of. But this guy supplied instruments, amplifiers to all of these groups, you know. So, and I thought that boy bands, you know, like Backstreet Boys and so on, that was a manufactured thing, that this was a new product type of thing. But you go back in the 60s and you had groups like the Monkees, for instance, where it's not a secret that they were a manufactured band. Okay. Where did the Monkees turn up? Laurel Canyon. Okay. Where did the Eagles come from? Laurel Canyon. Joni Mitchell, Laurel Canyon. Emmylou Harris, Laurel Canyon. Frank Zappa and the Mothers, Laurel Canyon. The Byrds, Laurel Canyon. The Flying Burritos, Laurel Canyon. it just goes on and on. You know, the Beach Boys, one of the key people, they're connected to Laurel Canyon. Okay. So you look at this thing, and Frank Zappa, he had a house. It was 5 floors high with a 2,000 square meter open living room. It was called the Cabin Lodge. Okay. With a three massive chandeliers.
Ola, are you still there? Seems like we're having a bit of a connection here. 2 seconds, I'll just try and call you back, Ola. Hey, you're back, Ola.
I am.
Yeah, you went all like a robot there. We got as far as Frank Zappa and his house. You were saying there was three things in the house, and that's where we got kind of interrupted, rudely interrupted.
Okay, so in this room there were three massive chandeliers, okay, and a fireplace going all the way down from the floor all the way up to the ceiling. I mean, massive, massive. And in this house, that was like a gathering point for all of these people, all of these upcoming musicians. That was just, you know, within a few years, that was where it all happened. That was where a whole new style of music was created. Okay. That was also where tons of LSD was picked up and distributed for free. For free. You know, when you look at, for instance, John Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas, that was one group very central in this whole thing as well. John Phillips was the founder or the arranger of the Monterey Pop Festival. You know, the one, you know, where Jimi Hendrix was playing all of these things. And the Monterey, whoa! And what happened there? They were supplied with more than 10,000 free acid trips, you know. Why would anyone do a thing like that to distribute them for free? You look at the guy, I can't remember his name now. Professor that were these things. They said no, but...
Well, you're back again. It's cut off again. 2 seconds, or I'll reconnect with you. Yeah, we got as far there. You were talking about the LSD being distributed, and I don't think you could remember somebody's name.
Okay, no, the guy that distributed this, that's his name. I cannot remember, but he was very connected to Timothy Leary and other people like that who are essential in the whole spreading of the LSD, but also connected to Frank Zappa. Like I say, he was signing up people like Beefheart and Alice Cooper, you know, because it's very connected to very weird, very, very weird satanic ritual things as well. And the death list of this canyon is unreal. It is unreal what happened there. Two of the major mass murders was committed in this small... We're still back to the same tiny little canyon, a few square miles, not many houses. I can just go through a few of the names that are connected to this Laurel Canyon. You got the comedian Lenny Bruce, actress Sharon Tate, Graham Parsons. He was a member of the international submarine band The Birds and the Flying Burrito Brothers. You got Mama Cash Elliott. She didn't die there in the canyon, but she was very much connected to the whole thing. She actually died in London in the exact same room as Keith Moon later died in. The exact same room. And that was the London home of a man called Harry Nilsson, very connected to Laurel Canyon, and also a drinking buddy of John Lennon. John Lennon was later assassinated. And Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski used to live or was connected to the Dakota building where John Lennon was later shot. That is actually the exact building where some of the scenes from Rosemary's Baby was filmed.
And Ola, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Sharon Tate, was she not actually involved in some way in the Helter Skelter murders as well.
She was one of the victims.
Yes, I mean, she was pregnant at the time as well, was she?
Yeah, yeah. It was Charles Manson that...
Sorry, it's just when you said her name there, it was nibbling away at me, and I wondered how I knew her name. But yeah, that's another fascinating subject as well.
Yeah, but it's all connected. That's what I'm saying. Charles Manson was in this whole rock scene, you know. He even made auditions for Neil Young, you know, from Crosby, Stills and Nash. And Neil Young was all like, my God, he's got such talent. He's got such talent, you know. So he and I'm going to come back to these serial killers and the murders around that. But I'll just go through some of the death list here. Did you hear that Mama Cash Elliot died in the very same room as Keith Moon? Okay. And Dwayne Allman, Barry Oakley from the Allman Brothers, actor Ramon Navarro, Sal Mineo, Diane Linkletter, Inge Stevens, Jay Sebring, Wojtek Frykowski, Abigail Folger. The last was the victims together with Sharon Tate, Judy Lee Sill. Jimi Hendrix was in this Laurel Canyon as well. And do you know he was the warming up act for the Monkees? Can you believe it? It's like unreal. But that was before he went to England and made it big. Then you have Roddy Bruce Barry, guitarist for the Byrds, Clarence White, Graham Nash, girlfriend Amy Gossage, Tim Buckley, he was singer-songwriter, Phyllis Major Brown, wife of Jackson Brown, singer Bobby Fuller, chemist Gary Hinnom, bassist Gary Twain, from Uriah Heep, Tommy Bolin from Deep Purple, Christine Hinton, Alan Blind, Alan, the blind old Wilson, singer in Canned Heat, Marianne Elizabeth Habe, and so on. It just goes on and on and on. And some actors that was very connected to this canyon was Jack Nicholson when he was young, James Dean, but that was beforehand. You have Dennis Hopper and Marlon Brando. And if you remember right, Marlon Brando has been involved in many of these or has had several awful tragedies happening to his family, including murders, all of them committed very close to Laurel Canyon. I mean, what are the odds? We're talking about, I don't know how many houses, but like a small, small little village. And this is the death list. I haven't even got through the whole thing. It's like 1 to 2, the chances of getting murdered, you know.
I still try to get over the fact I haven't heard of this place.
I know. It's fascinating to me. There's an absolutely incredible author called David Gowen, who's written a book called, let me just check. There's one called Program to Kill, and there's another one called The Weird Scenes in Laurel Canyon. I can truly recommend it. So I just ask you, what are the chances of this total anti-war movement, you know, let's stand up and just kick out everything that has to do with our parents, you know, and revolt, do a love revolution, do a whole thing of that. What are the chances of that being placed right in the smack center of military intelligence, film studios, the whole setup with equipment? And all of these groups, where so many are said that they've died from overdoses and so on. Why the police did never do any hits at all in this area, you know? I mean, one guy thought he was being busted for 40 years. He was looking at 40 years for a drug bust. He was let out after 14 days. This is standard procedure. All of these people, all of these rock stars were in the age for being drafted. None of them went. None of them went. You have this whole anti-society movement, you know, giving the big finger to the parents and establishment and so on. All of them signed by major labels. What was that? And what happened? They were put on all the major, youth programs. What does that tell you? It tells you that it's meant to happen. It's backed up by big money, by big finances, and for a reason. So this revolution was something totally different, I would suggest. Also, the whole hippie movement, you know, the hippie movement with paint, you know, make love, not babies, not war, you know, pay flowers on the belly and flower power, this whole thing. All of that started in Laurel Canyon. Surprise, surprise. It was a man called Vito and his Freakies. It was a dance group, and they were the ones that was like totally, they were totally tripping all over the place. And they made more impact than the music in these times. So they were all the time, when a new band was being promoted, they were there first, doing all these weird dances, and people like memorized by them, you know, not even listening, because many of these bands could not play. They could not play.
You with look enough into LSD, it. Though, anyone sounds good, Ola.
That is true, but I guess I'm not so experienced in that area. But when you look into these bands' records, who were playing on the records? Most of them are backed up with Elvis Presley's band. You know, top musicians that went there because these people could not play themselves. It sounded awful. It sounded awful. So we are like in an area where they just can, you know, like manufacture bands to make the next major thing and start this whole movement, you know, the whole flower power thing with the Vito and so on, to take away the attention from what was going on, to take away the attention from civil rights, the whole civil rights movement, the rights of equality for everyone, take away that whole attention away from the anti-war movement and so on, and totally discredit the youth movement, you know. These hippies just all over the place, overdosing, tripping, whatever, you know.
The Apple's iPhone 5S has been very successful in the US, but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware. The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870 HD 2-liter Turbo Galaxy 29 GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instantgram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhones.
Hello, welcome to iPhone tech support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?